Good day, everyone. Thank you for listening to this session on philosophy in secondary education and for attending the Society of Philosophy and History Education conference virtually. I know through my years of attending conferences and professional developments that the virtual ones aren't quite as fun as in-person, but they can still have quite a bit of enlightening information. So I hope I can kind of add to what you've been gathering throughout this virtual conference. My name is Dr. John Essington. I am a professor of education at Blackburn College in Carlinville, Illinois. Before I started teaching at Blackburn, I was actually a high school social studies teacher. I taught at a public high school in the city of St. Louis for the 7 years prior to starting at Blackburn. So before we really get into the session of today, I wanted to start off kind of the way I started off my courses in philosophy when I taught it as an elective in high school. And how I did this was I would start with like a critical thinking question, just kind of a fun question to get the students kind of their minds settled and thinking a little bit deeper than what they were right before when they were in the hallways kind of running around. So I'm going to actually give you a question that if you have the presentation, you can follow along and actually see the pictures and all this that go with it. Otherwise, you can hear me say it and then take some time and think about what the answer is. So I'm going to ask you a question and you have to come up with the answer. So the question is, a murderer is condemned to death. He has to choose between three rooms. The first is full of raging fires. The second is full of assassins with loaded guns. And the third is full of lions that haven't eaten in 3 years. Which room is safest for him? So I'm going to wait about 10 seconds to give you just a little bit of time to think about what your answer is. All right, so I know that was a short amount of time, but part of it is just to kind of get the blood flowing and get thinking a little bit with this same thing that I would do with my students. So if you don't feel bad if you got this wrong. I think I might have missed it the first time too because I wasn't really thinking. I wasn't critically thinking. I wasn't thinking about the question that was actually being asked. I was just trying to come up with an answer rather than thinking deeply about the question. So the answer is you would be safest in the room with the three lions that haven't eaten in 3 years, because obviously if they haven't eaten in 3 years, they would be dead. However, a lot of my students would say, well, the sniper, they could hide from the sniper, or the fire, they could try to put out the fire, because what was happening was these students that were, they had no background in logic, they had no background in philosophy, actually limited background in social studies in general, and they wanted to come up with an answer rather than thinking about what was truly being asked. So this was kind of like a starter question for me to start to get my students to actually take time and consider what we were going to be doing in the class that day. It's just the idea of thinking critically about what is being asked and how you break down the question and think critically and try to problem solve instead of just coming up with an answer that we're so fixated on in education right now. So overall, the topic that I will be discussing will be the need to bring philosophy back into the high school curriculum. Obviously, there are benefits if we could start it earlier in elementary school and middle school, but I'm trying to be more pragmatic, and with the amount of time and certification issues, if we could just introduce it at least at the high school level and prepare students for college, that would be a start, and then maybe we could push it towards younger as we go. So the title for today's session is Examining the Unexamined Education, Reviving Philosophy in Secondary Schools. And my focus was how to bring philosophy and formulated logic to the students who have had no background whatsoever dealing with this topic. So in the written portion that may be in the journal that follows, I have a breakdown of the literature, but I'm going to kind of give a brief summary right now of overall what the literature on this topic is saying about how fundamental and the advantages and disadvantages of studying philosophy and logic in secondary education is. For the most part, the research is very favorable, right? The idea of increasing students' ability to think critically, to problem solve, to rationalize, to understand comprehension. Reading comprehension is actually really big in this. The idea of understanding what is being asked and not just merely reading. I think those are kind of the major issues that get touched upon a lot in the literature. The negative aspects, the downside in the literature, isn't too surprising. A lot of it is there's just not enough time in the school day to also teach a logic class or a philosophy class. There's just not enough room. Another one that popped up several times is that it is a 20th century skill, right? We're talking constantly about 21st century skills, which is also a bit ironic considering we're almost a quarter of the way through the 21st century now. So I'm assuming pretty soon we'll be talking about the need for 22nd century skills. But that is one of the major ideas as far as a con for teaching philosophy is just that it's outdated. Especially with the movement for more micro-credentials, the idea of you're just studying a specific set of skills, and then you get credit for that, which kind of leaves out the liberal arts in general. But that's kind of the movement that has been going on throughout all of education. So to give you some background on how this project began, I started to teach an elective course on philosophy. It was entitled Introduction to Philosophy Through Pop Culture. Since my students had no background in philosophy, I wanted to make sure that I took this slowly and incorporated ideas that they would be aware of, hence the inclusion of pop culture. And it was in St. Louis, so I was in a public high school in St. Louis with students that usually came into my class and started our high school at a fifth and sixth grade reading level, so I couldn't really break into deep primary text with philosophy. So a lot of it was reliant on instruction from me, secondary sources, and also our combination of pop culture and philosophy as far as the ideas go. It was an action research project, so I was actually teaching the courses as well as examining the data from just basic logic and in numerical and oral standardized tests. And to give a little bit more about the school, the students' school was 100% free or reduced lunch. And so the academic standards didn't meet necessarily the state average. But the idea was, if no one has ever taught this, that their scores aren't going to be that dissimilar from any of the other public high schools in the city, because this just wasn't a topic that gets taught. So my research question for this was, what effect does the engagement with and study of formalized logic have on large urban school district students' ability to answer questions more rationally? So I just wanted to see what happens when I take a group of students and introduce them, and this was usually in their senior year. There was one or two juniors that were placed in this course, and we'll get to a little bit about that a little bit later of how the students were selected. But it was mostly going to be seniors, so they've spent almost their entire academic career without any actual philosophy or formulated logic courses. So I wanted to see what happens to their numerical and their verbal skills if we start to present them with some formulated logic. How does this affect their reasoning? And my hypothesis was that when participating in a philosophy-infused class, the large urban school district students' critical thinking skills will improve on logical reasoning examinations, measuring problem solving. I think this was the goal of the course. I think it's also the goal of any education course, is that you're wanting to see improvement if we include this curriculum, which sounds very obvious to educators, but the idea is if we're not teaching the class, then you won't see these benefits. So the idea of teaching the course in logic is to see improvement, so then you can actually show the administration that teaching this course has positive benefits for our students. And as we go through this, I'm now on slide 5 for those of you that have the actual presentation, is why should we study this problem? And one of the issues that I found in the literature was, how many proponents we have of using philosophy and logic in schools. It ranges from school principals and administrators, superintendents. We get politicians. President Obama was big on talking about the need to promote critical thinking and problem solving in schools. However, their idea of almost everyone's entire idea of critical thinking did not involve actually studying logic or problem solving. It was mostly the idea of critical thinking was increasing reading ability and not actually the ideas that go behind rationalized reasoning. And at the same time, while they're promoting this idea of increasing critical thinking and how important it's going to be for the future, they were defunding non-STEM curriculum. They're removing social studies from course curriculums entirely. In the district where I worked, most of middle school was almost completely devoid of social studies courses. The only social studies they would get would have been through a reading course, where maybe they would read something on Martin Luther King or read something about a historical event through the guise of English language arts, though. So I noticed that there was kind of a void in the research, that none of the studies that I found actually were measuring the advantages of the formalized study of logic conducted in low socioeconomic schools. Obviously, these schools are not seen as places where philosophy or logic is traditionally taught, and it isn't taught. So that was kind of another reason, because I saw there was an opening that no one had been looking at my students and how this can benefit them. So I wanted to also to focus on the idea of understanding and transferring their knowledge to like a more holistic educational experience rather than knowing the correct answer. I think knowing the correct answer is too specific and it doesn't necessarily transfer as well as knowing how to think. So that whole idea of knowing how to think instead of knowing what to think. So the design was that I created, I did it over the course of 2 years with two different classes. And the research design model was a pretest, post-test, quasi-experimental quantitative methodology. And what happened was I used an experimental group, two experimental groups, and two control groups. So I was teaching the experimental group with the new elective on Intro to Philosophy. And then a colleague in the social studies department was teaching a general, it was a coding class, and that was just his class that he had. And there was no prerequisite for either class. So the only way students were selected for one class or the other was through their schedule availability. I think the only hindrance was there was an AP reading class that some students were required to take. So that would be the only students that were kind of limited in their availability for this class. So I would take the experimental class and my colleague would take the control class. And we did this for 2 years, back-to-back years. So some of the demographics in the study, in the experimental group, 59% were African-American, 27% were Caucasian, 14% were Hispanic, 68% of the students were male and 32% were female. Whereas in the control group, 71% were African-American, 17% of the students were Caucasian, and 9% Hispanic. 63% were male, and 37% of the students were female. So if you notice, there was some small differences in the demographics, but it was by random chance and scheduling. The timeline, it started in the fall of 2016 with our first cohort in the philosophy class, and it ended by the spring of 2018, and then I used some over the summer to analyze the data, and then I wrote up an article in the fall of 2018. So let's look at what our data kind of showed us, and what we see is that unsurprisingly, the students that took the course performed better on the numerical reasoning. The experimental group, if you have the slides on slide 9, is they had an increase of 5% from their pretest to their post-test, whereas the control group went up 1%, and that was just obviously without the course, they stay basically exactly where they were before. On the data analysis part two, we're kind of looking at the numerical reasoning median. So you start to see that the experimental group actually went up from 6% as far as the 2016-17 experiment. And then you saw also an increase of 2% in the 2017-2018 group, whereas the two control groups pretty much stayed flat. And their ability to answer the logic, numerical, and verbal questions remained the same through over the course of the semester. The verbal reasoning also saw an increase for the students that were in the class. They went from 33% to 36% as far as their correct answers on the standardized tests, and the control group remained stagnant, just like they did in the numerical reasoning. We saw a dramatic increase in the verbal reasoning in the 2016-2017, so the first cohort actually jumped 10% after the conclusion of the semester, which was a large increase for us, whereas the second cohort in the experiment group actually stayed the same on their verbal results. And the 2017-2018 control group actually increased 2% to tie with the second cohort group, whereas the first control group remained stagnant. So we saw a great deal of variation in the increase of the first cohort group, and then we kind of saw stagnation with the remainder of the groups. And then in our standard deviation, I think this one was fairly interesting as far as we looked at how the post-tests of the experimental cohort were broadly stretched. And then in the post-tests, we saw that they had kind of, you know, the scores had kind of found a middle range and became more connected with one another. We saw less of a variety in our average scores. So as far as the effect size goes, we had modest effect on the verbal, and then there was a moderate effect on the numerical. And then the pretest versus post-test design, the same as far as a modest effect for the verbal with a 0.22 effect size. However, we did see also a moderate effect in the numerical with a 0.77% effect size. So we did see some changes. There wasn't anything dramatic, I'd say, but it was mostly from the idea that we're dealing with students that have no background information on this topic. So some of the findings that we found was that the experimental group generally outperformed the control group by 3 to 4%. The experimental control groups were far more complex picture than just the idea of take the class and you learn a lot more. We saw that we had variances between the males and the females. The females outperformed their male counterparts on both the verbal and numerical, which kind of goes against the ingrained stereotype of males outperforming females in numerical. We also had that the African-American students performed better on the verbal assessment than the white students, but then the white students outperformed the black students in the numerical assessment. So the last thing I wanted to discuss before my time is up is some of the recommendations that I kind of analyzed and found from the study. And that is that the Action Research Project suggested that in accordance with the literature, that there are benefits for studying formalized logic. It will help the students It will also help the students when they're taking their standardized tests, ACTs, SATs. Introduction of formal logic and reasoning skills need to be introduced at the elementary level. If you want to increase the performance at the high school level, obviously they need some background level. And if you begin with a formalized study of logic when they're in elementary, then middle, and then the high school, we're going to see even greater gains. Therefore, my recommendation would be that we need to create and adapt a curriculum for the study of logic, starting in elementary with basics and then working our way through high school before the students leave high school and are ready for career in college. So that is my findings. Thank you for your time and enjoy the rest of the conference.